TLC AM Indianapolis.
Indy's choice for inspiration and praise.
AM 1310, The Light.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Afternoons with Amos. Mr. Brown is taking a much needed vacation today. My name is Maggie Lewis, and I have the honor and privilege of serving as the president of the City County Council. As our city is faced with some major crime issues, I thought that I would use the next couple of hours to discuss the mayor's crime plan. I have said over and over that in order for our city to decrease crime, that it's going to take all of us doing our part and being engaged in the conversation. I have invited some key stakeholders from our community to be a part of that conversation. The only person that is missing is you, and if you want to be a part of that conversation, please call in at 239-1310. Again, that number is 239-1310. We are going to use this time again to discuss crime in our great city. Let's begin with an overview of the mayor's plan. Mr. Bart Brown is the CFO for the City County Council. Mr. Brown, welcome.
Thank you, President Lewis, and I'll go fast and furious here, because I know we want to get to some more guests. The plan itself is called the Early Education Public Safety Initiative. It's got three major components. Two of those components will require new revenue, and one is actually a lobbying effort with the state. The first one is prevention, and that's the mayor's plan to fund 1,300 preschool scholarships at a cost of about $5 million per year. And the mayor is calling for an elimination of the homestead credit to pay for those scholarships. The next is protection, and that's a call to hire more officers over the next 4 years. The gross number is 280 officers up until 2018. The net number is 112 new officers, which require about $10 million, which he intends to ask the council to raise the public safety tax from 0.35 to 0.5, and that will raise about $15 million. And the last is punishment, and that's an effort to go to the state and ask for longer sentences for crimes.
Okay, so tell us again what those three components are.
The prevention are the scholarships for preschool of about 1,300 children.
Mm-hmm.
Protection, adding 112 officers to the ranks of IMPD, and punishment, longer sentences.
I'm not sure. Okay, punishments, longer sentences. So this plan, looking at education, looking at funding for additional officers, it doesn't necessarily speak to the role of the community. However, again, I said that it's going to take all of us doing our part. And one of the questions that continues to come up as I'm out in the community is the role of the black church, the role of the community. So I've invited Dr. David Hampton from Light of the World Christian Church to be a part of this conversation. Thank you, Dr. Hampton, for making time to be here this afternoon. If you don't mind, can you speak to what is the role of the church, specifically what is the role of the African-American church, and then also from your point of view, what can the community do to do their part? What is their role?
Well, thank you, President Lewis. And certainly the role of the church ultimately and primarily is to lead souls to Christ. I mean, that's our primary mission. That's the mission of the church, the mission of Jesus Christ. But in that, we feel that the more individuals we can transform, the more we can reach and change hearts and minds. You know, that's the difficult job of pastors.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We're really in the business of changing hearts and minds, which is a more long-term approach, of course, but we do feel that it is the permanent approach. The issues that we face as a community are systemic. The church is certainly one of the stakeholders in the community that must partner with other agencies, of course, with our public safety, with our other, with education, mm-hmm. with businesses. We have to be partner stakeholders if we're going to deal with the issue of crime. Churches are really doing their part every day. I mean, every Sunday on any given day, not just Light of the World. I can name off any number of churches, mm-hmm. any number of my colleagues and pastors who feed the hungry, who have clothing programs, who give aid to the impoverished, who do great ministry, and in so doing, they are reaching individuals who are perhaps hopeless, who are of a particular economic you know, economically and socially are struggling, or impoverished. And, I think that, you know, one of the criticisms or critiques of the church is, what is the church doing? Church isn't doing enough. Or, you know, we hosted a lock-in where almost 1,000 teens came.
Wow.
And the criticism was, well, none of those teens are the ones committing crimes. Mm-hmm. Well, I beg to differ. They're not committing the crimes because we gave them an outlet.
Right, right.
And so if, you know, my plea is, if the community could become more of a stakeholder rather than criticize, let's contribute.
Mm-hmm.
And that ought to really be our mantra. Let's not criticize, let's contribute.
Absolutely.
If you don't have a solution, then you're really just part of the problem.
Right.
We
right.
can postulate all day, but we need to really find solutions.
I agree. Thank you for sharing that, Pastor Hampton. Also in our studio, we have the experts, if you will, in the room. We have Director Riggs here, and we have Rick Snyder from the FOP here as well to weigh in on the issues. And so, first of all, I'm not going to go super political with you all. I do appreciate you taking time out of your schedules as well to be a part of this conversation. But can we first talk about the numbers from your point of view, Mr. Director, then also from the FOP's point of view?
We will. And let me just kind of step back and talk about, I guess, at the end of my first year here, and I've been here since October 2012. Mm-hmm. And Madam President, thank you for the warm welcome to the community. You were one of the first elected officials I met. You've been very supportive since I've been here. Dr. Hampton, thank you. Light of the World is doing tremendous work in our community.
Thank you.
The community conversations we've had about crime, the first one we had
mm-hmm.
was in your church, and I learned a great deal from the young people. And the lock-in that you had is outstanding. I know we had another community conversation there with young mothers, and we have another one I just found out. I didn't know you were doing this. Reentry that's coming up in October. So we are indebted to you and the other churches that do so much. But I kind of equated during my speech the issues that we're facing today to a family. And if we want to look at our city as a family, mm-hmm. we need to have a family meeting, and mm-hmm. we have to be mm-hmm. honest, and we have to have dialogue and talk about these things. And Madam President and Dr. Hampton, the thing that concerns me and Rick, and I know I can speak for him because we've spoken to this often, we had 125 people that lost their lives because they were murdered last year.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be, as a community, personally offended by that. I know we talk about data and histories and criminal. It doesn't matter to me. That's 125 people that have lost their lives in the city of Indianapolis. But our family is also in trouble in other ways. 110 at minimum lost their lives because of heroin.
Mm-hmm.
We know that heroin is increasing. We also know that 168 of our neighbors and friends committed suicide. We have a lot of social issues, and I certainly appreciate your all support, the FOP support, and us working together in partnership. There's a lot of social issues, a lot of community issues, and to work together and have this honest dialogue like today is very helpful. And Amos Brown has been great about mm-hmm. having us on here as well and talking about these issues.
Great.
Yeah, and just to piggyback on that, I would say that the biggest thing for us to focus on now are really putting actions over words.
Mm-hmm.
We've spent a considerable amount of time, since the beginning of this year, focusing on what are we going to do and what are the plans, what are the options for moving into 2015. Well, we're there now. It's come down to everybody putting their plans on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And that started to occur. And I think right from the outset, it's important to note that the very first thing we did was applaud the mayor for putting a plan out there. That was mm-hmm. something we had been asking for some time. And now the important thing is to focus really on collaboration and not dividing the discussion, but to really collaborate together to figure out how do we bridge the gaps between the various plans that are out there and move forward that benefits everyone. And for us, time is of the essence.
Mm-hmm.
We being our police officers, our women and men who are out there on the front lines combating the very challenges that the director outlined to us, they want remedies to this just as much as anyone. But they also need and want the resources to be able to impact the situation and make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And that always circles back around to this issue before us of the various plans and how many more officers do we need and all those things. So again, it's important for our dialogue to always be of a collaborative nature and talk about bridging our differences, not expanding those differences to move forward.
So the first question, what is the number then as we talk about supporting the women and men that are out there, you know, making sure that our city is safe? What is the number? I know I've gone back and forth with folks in the administration, folks in the community. What is the number that we should be working off of?
I think it depends who all you talk to. I know the chief and I last year during the budget asked for 100 to 200. And I think that the other plan is about 250, Rick, is that I'm trying to remember all the numbers there.
But a net increase.
Yeah, a net increase, not hiring. When we talk numbers, I'm talking about a net increase of where we are today. So I think we're all in the same ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
How we come up with those numbers obviously is something that with the mayor's leadership and yours, Madam President, the conversation from the community, I'm sure we will figure that out and move forward. Now, what does that do for us? And I'm sure the vice president would like to add to this, but when I'm out talking to officers,
mm-hmm.
I hear that sometimes they've struggled to get time off, and that's important. Think about this. They have family issues. They have ball games they want to go to. It gives them a little relief. It gives the chief a little bit more personnel to move mm-hmm. them in the right place. The other thing that's important, and I want to give the FOP credit on this because I think there's a misconception involving the FOP in this, is that we really said and looked, if we're going to hire, are we recruiting within Indianapolis?
Mm-hmm.
Are we recruiting our best and brightest? And does our police department represent the diversity in our community? And when we looked at the numbers, FOP was in there, we saw some major concerns. We are addressing that, and this latest class is 40% diverse.
Mm-hmm.
We are heading in the right direction, and I have to give the team that worked together, especially Chief Hyde and his great team for mm-hmm. doing that, and we are committed to doing that long term. We have to have a department that represents our community very well.
Mm-hmm. The numbers, Rick.
You know, we stand by the staffing commission.
Mm-hmm.
We still advocate for 500 officers hired over the next 5 years with a net increase of 250 officers. That's just the baseline to be able to continue to provide the services that our community expects.
Okay, we're going to take a brief break, and then we'll return with Afternoons with Amos.
Hello, this is Rod Bohannon, a local attorney, and when I want to stay informed, I always listen to Afternoon with Amos on AM 1310 The Light.
And we are back. You are listening to Afternoons with Amos. I am Maggie Lewis, City County Council President, sitting in the big seat for Mr. Brown, who is on vacation. And before we went to our break, Mr. Snyder was speaking about those numbers of officers that we do need on the streets. Mr. Snyder.
Yeah, so again, that was a recommendation from the IMPD Staffing Commission, and it's important to put everything into context here. The Staffing Commission was a bipartisan commission that was created by the council under the leadership of Vice President Barth and President Lewis. The commission was co-chaired by Councillor Barth and Councillor Moriarty Adams. But it had representation from both parties on there, as well as citizens from the community and other subject matter experts from the mayor's office, Department of Public Safety, and the FOP. In that, it was a unanimous recommendation to support the proposal, which did come from the chief of police with input from the director's office, and also, frankly, without any planning, mirrored the same presentation that the FOP provided.
Mm-hmm.
Because, frankly, the facts are the facts. We are woefully understaffed on our police department,
mm-hmm.
and we need more officers. To the mayor's point, we 100% agree we will not police our way out of the current situation
right.
that we are in. Let me say that again. The police officers 100% agree we will not police our way out of the challenges that we're facing now.
Mm-hmm.
However, what we can guarantee you is that a properly staffed police department and this issue of understaffing is the biggest common denominator in any other proposals that are out there. Invariably, things will flow back through the police department for us to be able to provide and assist with the services that we're talking about. So to the director's point, it is a valid point about proper staffing for the needs of our employees.
Mm-hmm.
But it's even much bigger than that. And I appreciate the fact that you have a person from management who is so dialed into the importance of rest and time with family
mm-hmm.
and a work-life balance mm-hmm. for our employees.
Mm-hmm.
It's critically important, especially in this field. But we also don't want this to get lost in the discussion, which is the crisis that we are really in. We're also talking about officers having the proper backup and support they need at the times of occurrences, and also to prevent these violent actions from taking place. Don't forget, keeping in context, just within the past few nights, we had two more officers who were savagely attacked, and somebody tried to kill them, shot at them, while they were responding and trying to remedy a situation, even with the chips stacked against them, the deck stacked against them in terms of not having the proper staffing they should have. They're not backing off. They're not slowing down. They're not dismissing their responsibilities.
Right.
And that is a testament to their character.
Absolutely.
And that is the issue that we have on the table. And that's why we want to avoid making this a political issue. We need to recognize that we have women and men who are a part of our community who are stepping forward to take on these challenges as a full-time job, a career. And they've dedicated their lives to it. And all they are asking is for the proper support and resources to be successful in that while recognizing the risks that they're taking. And that's a huge commitment on their part, but to the director's part, their family as well. Their family who really loans them to the city every day. Truthfully, not knowing if they're going to come back or not, with the faith that they're going to have the help and support that they need.
And so I think we all can agree that we are not going to be able to police our way out of this issue. However, one of the solutions is additional officers because you are operating at a deficit, correct?
Absolutely. And let's be consistent on this.
Okay.
Invariably, we're talking about crime. And when crime occurs, there has to be someone who addresses it, right? I mean, I think it sounds simplistic, but you got to have the people there to do the boots-on-the-ground logistical work of catching those who are perpetrating crimes on other people, victimizing other people, and then ensuring that they see justice.
Right. So we're going to take a couple calls. We have a caller on line one. Go ahead.
Hello?
Hello, you're on.
Oh, yes, I got a question. I got really two questions. The first question is this. As a major city, does the chief of police and also the mayor, normally there's a matrix for like major cities like Chicago, New York, Dallas, like per, your population of probably a million. Shouldn't there be like a certain amount of police officers per million, whatever? Isn't there like a basic formula for that?
Mr. Director?
This is the fourth, I guess, staffing study that I've been through. And there's a lot of discussion regarding how many do you need. But every city's unique. You can use some of those as a guideline. But I think when the council sat down, the bipartisan committee sat down, looked at it, they realized that some of those old ways are antiquated, that every city's different. And what makes us different than almost any major city in this nation is how large of an area that we have to police. I mean, it is a massive area compared to other cities, much larger than some of the cities that have much more of a population. So we have to take that in mind. We also have to realize we're a top five convention town. And that's added people every year. We have major events. So we have to make sure we take all of that into consideration when we look at how we have to have adequate staffing, not just for the police department, but also for fire, for EMS, for all those public safety. But in regards back to the point of, you know, so much per capita, it's hard when you, in today's world, when you have an influx of population. You know, our population may be 900,000 and some change, but during the workday is, what is it, 1.2, 1.5, 1.7? It depends what day. We have to take all that into consideration. Right. It's not as easy as it used to be. The other thing is we pull civilian employees out as well. So I think we've done a very good job of working hard to try to allocate our people in the right way. And you have to remember when we did allocation first and then start talking about study because we want to be fiduciarily responsible. FOP and others are at the table. And a lot of, I think, Rick, it's about like 150, 156 people that had their jobs changed somewhat, and we were able to do that over a six-month period, put them back on the streets answering runs. And I want to brag about our workforce. Think about this. If you had your working hours changed and it changes your life, you would be upset. But, you know, when those individuals were removed, FOP involved not one grievance from your Indianapolis Metro Police Department because they're that committed to the citizens of this community. It says a lot about the men and women.
It really does. And, caller, you had a second question.
Yes, the second question kind of pertains to you, Madam Chair. In reference to individuals who want to get into politics or learn more about the consequences of your vote, like, you know, I just came back from overseas military. Now I'm a resident back here in Indianapolis, Indiana. And I noticed that, you know, a lot of us voters and residents really don't know the consequences of us not voting. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, I didn't know that, you know, the mayor and the city council appoints, you know, commissioners.
Absolutely.
And they also, you know, they have a profound effect upon, you know, certain things that go on in Indianapolis. So I was wondering, is there anywhere in Indianapolis that have, like, courses or meetings about, you know, basic things about, you know, government?
So I'm not sure exactly about any courses per se. However, what happens is elected officials in this community, everything that we do impacts your quality of life. And therefore, regardless if you're a Republican, Democrat, or Libertarian, you need to pay attention to the work that we do. For local government, there's the government channel, and you can follow everything that we do. Also, I don't want to go super political on Amos's show. However, you have young Democrats, young Republican clubs, Democrat club, Republican clubs, where you can go and meet with elected officials and kind of follow what happens in politics. And so whichever party you identify with, I encourage you to reach out to those folks. But again, everything that we do is public. You can see it on TV. You can see it online. And I encourage you just to follow along that way. But then also, get to know your elected officials. Oftentimes we hear from you after we cast a vote. And after we cast that vote, it is too late. I cannot go back and change my vote. And so it's so important that you follow along and be a part of the process.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. And thank you for calling in. We have Miss Rita on the line. Miss Rita?
Yes. I have a couple of questions and a comment. The questions are to you both, and would you both agree that the bottom line of all of the lack of police is, and the need for the police, is the crimes, the robberies and the burglaries, the drugs? Would you say that is a fuel for the fire, a need for the policemen in the city?
Yeah, I think, you know, invariably, your level of crime is going to suggest whether or not you need more officers. But it's important to note that it's somewhat of a circular discussion, right? So when you add more officers and you drive down crime, if you look at it solely based on that premise, then people would suggest at that point, then we don't need as many officers as we have. You cut the workforce, and then you start the cycle over again. So the key is really striking the balance to find out which level is appropriate to keep crime at reasonable levels, but also provide the other services that folks are looking for. It's important to note the FOP has been very consistent on this. We are very strong advocates for a strong, proactive community policing model. But we also always acknowledge this. That takes additional resources. We can do bare-bones policing. That's purely reactive. A crime occurs. You call the police. We come. We investigate it. Maybe we arrest somebody, and the criminal justice process starts. The point of view that we take is, why not invest a little extra on the front end and move forward with some of these other proactive programs that hopefully prevent the crimes from ever occurring in the first place?
I totally agree with the need for the policeman and doing it on the front end, and then you don't have the crime. And I think the chief of police has even said about the heroin problem that is in the city that fuels the burglaries and the robberies, which means that we do need policemen. Now, I am aware of federal community policing grants that would provide the police power that's needed. However, this grant has to be applied for, and you have to admit the problems that are in this city. And I understand that our mayor is more concerned with tourism than to getting the police, the community policing grants, which means he would have to make a declaration that, yes, we do have a crime problem. Yes, we do have a drug problem. And rather than to do that, he wants to take his constituents that he's supposed to serve and tax us more by getting rid of the Homestead Tax Act to fund additional policemen, rather than to using what's available to him, as which are the community police grants, which will provide the policemen and stay out of his constituents' pockets.
Okay, we're going to take a brief break, and then Ms. Rita will come back and allow Dr. Hampton and the Public Safety Director to respond to your question.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hello, this is Tanya Bell, President and CEO of Indiana Black Expo, and you are listening to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310 The Light, Indy's source for inspiration and praise.
Good afternoon, and we are back. We have Ms. Rita on the line, and the director was going to respond. Did we lose Ms. Rita? Okay, with Dr. Hampton and Director Riggs, we're going to both respond to some of her concerns. And so, Director Riggs.
And she was talking about hiring officers and putting more people on the street to help with crime. If we look at the crime issues, we have to realize that last year crime was down. This year crime is upticked somewhat. We believe robberies are going to be up about 3 to 5%. Most of that, we believe, is due to heroin. Burglaries, surprisingly, are down about 15% right now, which is a good sign. Mm-hmm. Some petty thefts are up somewhat. Once again, we think that is because of heroin. But let me take a moment and just talk about staffing one more time. We are in such a good position as a city that we're having this discussion. Mm-hmm. And I don't really think it's more of a debate as it is a discussion. Mm-hmm. We're trying to move forward in the mayor proposal. Council's been hearing that, and we'll be talking about that. But at the end of the day, we have to realize, if you step back and you think about what this nation went through in 2008 with the economic downturn, it says a lot about the leadership of this city, and many of you here today, and the councilors and the mayor, that we did not lay off officers, did not lay off civilian employees. That was a huge step in the right direction. I was just sharing with Rick a moment ago, you know, there's department recently laid off 400 people, getting mm-hmm. ready to lay off 400. We're talking about adding. We're going to be above attrition for the first time. So as we have this discussion, is it an issue? Yes. Are we addressing it? Yes. But we're able to because those of you here that are elected officials and the mayor made good choices back in the middle of the economic downturn. And I think that you all deserve a lot of credit for putting us in a position where we can even have this conversation.
Wonderful. I think we have Ms. Rita back on the line, and Dr. Hampton was going to respond to some of your comments. Ms. Rita, Dr. Hampton?
Yeah, I just wanted to add and contribute to the conversation. And Rita, you make a good point. I think that more police may be one answer to the issue, but I think we need more parents, quite frankly. And I hate to sound preachy, but that's what I do for a living.
That's,
so
that's it.
I was more afraid of my mother than I ever was of the police, and to this day I still am. And you know, the types of values that parents instill in their children really stick with them for the rest of their lives. So I would just challenge our community, as we talk about adding more police, let's also add more parents.
Miss Rita, did you have any other comments?
Yes, I know Dr. Hampton, you're a preacher, and Maggie Lewis, I know you're the president of the council, and I am really taken aback at your comments during break, which was me going on and on. But in any case, I would like you to respond to community policing grants that are available for us.
Let me hit that first. This is Director Riggs. I was invited along with the mayor to meet with President Obama, and he had shared some of his thoughts and efforts, and then we also met with Attorney General Holder and talked to him. But it was very clear in those meetings that a lot of the grants that are out there right now are drying up. They were asking for advice, and we submitted advice, and we were very grateful to see it in My Brother's Keeper that the president announced, and that they'd take invite, and we were actually invited, and I was honored to be there when he announced that program. And what we're asking for is money to come through government, but for them not to put a lot of strings attached to it, meaning we don't have to hire an administrative staff and lose that money. So in shrinking budgets, give us money, let us pass it through to organizations or churches that do this work day in and day out to help. It's good community policing. It lets us get involved with our community. It lets those leaders in the community like Dr. Hampton and what his church is doing get that money and be able to put to good use. And when that money dries up, his church and other organizations are still there doing the work day in and day out. And I think Rick had something to add.
Yeah, I, Ms. Rita, I would say this, and it's a very valid point on the grants and the grant opportunities that are out there. If you've, and it sounds like you have been following the discussion, from the FOP, we have been strong advocates for pursuing those grants. We should be turning over every rock we can find to add dollars to this to help sustain what it is that we need. However, in that, and the FOP actually went to Washington, D.C. with that objective in terms of reaching out with our congressional delegation there. But in that discussion, we also recognize this. Before we start going and looking to others to help us solve our problems, we have to be willing as a community to step forward and say, and here's the list of things that we have done ourselves to invest in ourselves before we've asked or sought out resources from someone else. And that goes back to the heart of this discussion about the homestead credit elimination, the public safety tax, even the idea of this commuter tax going to the state house. I think everyone sees the role that all these play, but we got to be able to say that we were willing to basically, we as a community were willing to step forward and contribute to the solutions bank, if you will, before we went looking to others. So, again, it's kind of like the previous discussion. It's going to be a circular approach. We kind of have to do all at the same time. Unfortunately, what we understand is, to your point with the COPS grants, that was not pursued this year. However, there's always hope for 2015. But what we have available to us right now is our opportunity to step forward as a community and take the needed steps that we have to before pursuing those grants.
And this is John Barth, Vice President of the Council. I was on the IMPD Staffing Study Commission, and as we've been discussing, there are lots of different options presented to fund the IMPD and try to get more officers. We've talked about two of them, and that involves taxes. We've also made recommendations that were not tax-related. They were other options that were more creative, and one of them was to ensure that we pursued every option when it came to grants and so on. And one of the recommendations along those lines was to pursue the COPS grant. So that wasn't done this year by the Ballard administration or years prior, and that's a really key opportunity. I know that President Lewis herself has been to Washington, D.C., and spoken to our federal representatives, and they have indicated that they will be supportive. So I'm personally very supportive of pursuing the COPS grants in the future.
Thank you so much, Ms. Rita, for your call. We also have another caller on the line, Anonymous.
Good evening. I just wanted to say that there is no explanation necessary for, like, the cops getting out of their cars. Only a moron would think, say, or believe that a cop should stay in the car when he is called out on a run. And that's basically, you know, all I wanted to say, and I wanted to let you guys know that there are people that would love to see you get out of your car if you're called on an emergency. If you're called to assist, they would love to see you get out of your vehicles. That was my comment. Thank you
so much for calling in. Mr. Snyder?
Yeah, just on behalf of our police officers, we have felt that support. It goes without saying, and the efforts with the shirts that have been sold and the amount of community reaction of folks participating in that. What's interesting is to stand at the FOP in the midst of the lines of people who are coming in to purchase those shirts and hear what they are saying. And there's so much support out there for our police officers and what they do, and it's really turned into a very visible, tangible way of showing that. So just on behalf of them, we greatly appreciate it, and so you know they feel that.
Again, you're listening to Afternoons with Amos, and if you want to be a part of the conversation, please call in at 239-1310, 239-1310. We did have a couple more guests that came into the studio. We have Counselor John Barth, Vice President of the City County Council, and also Counselor Feaster. Thank you both for taking time to be here. We are going to another caller, Terry.
Hello, how are you today, ma'am?
I'm doing well, and you?
I am well. I'm a long-time listener, and I'm a long-time voter. What was the Vice President of Council's name, John what?
John Barth.
Okay. All right. I have a few points, and if we could, I'd like to turn the sponsors away from the FOP and from the city's administration and their responses to this? And in the interest of getting more callers on, if you could just give me really brief responses to these, I'd appreciate it.
That's fine.
The first one is, and from my point of view, some of the things that the city needs are children's youth programs and activity centers, especially for after school and summer things. What do you all think about that?
Counselors, he's asking, what are your views on summer programs for the youth in our community? Counselor Feaster and Counselor Barth?
This is John Barth. I completely support summer programming for youth. I think it's a critical part, not only of youth development, but also making sure that our youth have healthful, useful activities to do during the summer.
Mm-hmm. Counselor Feaster?
And I absolutely support that. It's in the implementation that we really need to focus on. How does that money flow? Who is going to be doing mm-hmm. it? How is it going to be organized? How many children are going to be involved? Who is invited? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of planning that needs to be done. But, a friend of mine is Malachi Walker, and I'm sure that there are a lot of other programs out there that I'm not aware of, but I am aware of Malachi. He's been involved in the community for a long, long mm-hmm. time and does a great job with young men on the East Side. So I heartily support those kinds of programs.
And you had another question?
Thank you. Yes, a few more and very quickly.
Yes, sir.
Public transportation and public housing are something that people need in this city. Believe it or not, public safety director, we need those a lot more than we need more officers, because for decades, public transportation and public housing have suffered in this city. People are not able to get to the existing jobs where they are. They're not able to have that, a work-life balance. It's not a positive balance. What do you think about that?
Counselors, transportation, public housing.
I'm strongly in favor of more transportation in Indianapolis. I think it's a big deficit of ours. I think it's hurting our success in attracting people to our city to live, work, and play. I'm really pleased that the General Assembly passed the ability for the voters of Marion County to make our own decision if we want to invest more in public transportation, and I'm hopeful the people of the city will have the opportunity to vote on that very thing in the 2016 budget. It's 2016 election, sorry.
Talk about bipartisanship. I agree.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
But I'm the numbers person, and we really need to find a way to fund it, because Indigo does not support itself. We've got to find the money to make that viable.
And your last question, sir.
Yeah. Well, it's a multi-part. It includes work skills training centers, some more public safety officers, and their training being representative of the community, the composition of more officers representing the community, and appropriate training so whenever they go into a situation, they have some knowledge or some experience so they won't under or overreact. And I'm looking at targeting more women and more people of color, because there are enough European-American males on this force to represent the people that live in this metropolitan area.
Yeah, so from the FOP standpoint, this is important to hear, and it's always nice to have these opportunities. This is something that we've been very supportive of and encouraging to the department, and working with the Director Riggs and Chief Height and their administrations on how to do that and how to ensure we get the most return on that investment. And that's in process, and we see it with this latest class, as the director alluded to earlier in the show. The other component that I want to stress to you is we could not do the work that we are doing now, and we would not have the results that we have had in the past 2 to 4 years had it not been for the superb training that our officers have. Just a few nights ago, when we had two officers that were shot at and had to engage in a very difficult situation. It was in a densely populated area in an apartment complex in the middle of the night while people were sleeping in their beds. We had no stray rounds. We had no one else injured, no innocent bystanders injured. And let me assure you, that is 100% a testament to the training that these officers have. And the discussion that we had, and we've had many times around these critical incidents, is there but for the grace of God, had we not had the level of training that we've had, and avoided cutting our training in these times of budget challenges, which is often the course that many police departments take, with the collaborative work between the FOP and the police department's management team, we've avoided that because we see it as that investment. So to your point, it's a valid point. But I want to assure you that is in place. So what we need to hear from the community is, you know, you can cut other places, but those are the areas you absolutely do not want to cut, and we don't want to see cut. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Thank you. But what about the city administration? Does the city administration have any intention or any plan to have more women and more men of color, more women of color?
Yes, this is Director Riggs. Absolutely. And if you would like, feel free to contact my office, and I can show you the team of personnel that we put together. Gosh, I'm thinking, Rick, what, a year and a half, almost two years ago now, because we were planning for future recruit classes, and we made that an issue, and we really sat down and looked at our allocation. I've been very clear. I've been here on Amos's show before. Got a little bit of hot water when I said this, but we need to have more than 13% African-American on our workforce.
Absolutely.
And we need to work towards that goal to reflect our community. But I believe, and let me also be clear, we did not change any testing. We did not lower any standards. We didn't do any of that. What we did was we looked at our recruitment effort. We changed the way we recruited. We recruited our best and brightest in Indianapolis. And as a result, we have a very diverse class, about 40% diversity in this class. We believe it'll be similar in the next class. We were able to also do that in the fire services. We believe when we recruit in our hometown, we get a diverse workforce. But I've got to be honest and tell you that 40% of all of those officers that are eligible to retire today are African American. We have to continue to hire diverse classes to make sure that we increase the number and we mirror our community. It's a challenge, but we are up to that challenge and we're working hard with FOP. And you have a great chief that's showing a lot of leadership there as well.
All right. Thank you, sir. Very quickly, what's your phone number?
You can call 327-5090, or dps@indy.gov. dps@indy.gov is the email for anyone listening needs to contact our office.
Thank you all very much. I hope we have a much better, safer, more represented city. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your call. Counselors, and so I believe most of the members of the City County Council agree that we need to have additional officers. The debate, the question becomes, how do we fund it? And with the mayor's plan, it states that we would eliminate the homestead credit and increase the public safety tax. Where are you on this issue?
As I mentioned earlier, this is John Barth. I sponsored and then served on the IMPD Staffing Study Commission. And so I spent 4 months this year with Mr. Schneider looking very carefully at the numbers and listening to the community and listening to the IMPD tell us the state that they're in. And the thing that impacted me more than anything, the testimony that really was resonant, was when Chief White from Denver came to Indianapolis to testify about his experiences. And Chief White is a good friend of Director Riggs, I understand. They used to work together. Chief White said something that resonates with me today, and I think about it nearly every day. He said he always makes sure any force that he is overseeing has at least 35% of their time spent on community-oriented policing. And that really tightened my focus and made me realize that the community-oriented policing is a thing we have to achieve. We have to get there, but we have to get there by being very deliberative and having a clear plan and achieving it. And that's why what I'm hearing pretty loudly from the community is that there seems to be some support for this idea of raising a tax that is specifically and explicitly for the IMPD and public safety in general, and that is a public safety tax. I'm getting much more pushback on the concept of eliminating the homestead tax credit. So right now what I'm doing is going around to neighborhood associations, presenting the plan, listening to what folks have to say, and judging what the level of support in the community is. But without hesitation, I will support making sure we get new IMPD officers. Just how we do it and what the math is the question right now.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Councilor Feaster.
And again, I agree with most of what he said.
You should move over to my district.
Yeah, there you go.
We should sit on your side of the aisle. Help us out a little.
Well, first let me say that the homestead credit elimination is not the $45,000 that everyone gets who owns a home from the state. That's a state-level tax deduction. This is a local homestead credit that was instituted before the tax caps. When the tax caps came into effect, this local homestead credit was no longer really needed. It's like getting a double rebate coupon, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
89 of the 92 counties in the state of Indiana have already eliminated this homestead credit. And Marion County hasn't. I don't know that I have an explanation for that, but I think it's time that it does happen because it can be spent on the very issue that we're talking about, and that is putting more officers on the street. So in essence, whoever would lose this homestead credit, if the homestead credit is eliminated, would be paying for the service of the officers that will be put on the street to keep them safe.
Okay.
If I could just add, if I could just add one thing, the challenge with the elimination of the homestead tax credit is that the way that the tax caps work is that it has a net effect of having a negative impact on schools, on township schools in particular, and the library as well. There's about $4 million in Indigo. About $4 million have come out of schools, comes out of the library, comes out of Indigo. So that's why the IMT Staffing Study Commission recommended that if we eliminate it, we only do it on a four-year tail. That way that gives those taxing entities the ability to plan for that in their budgets, and it has a much less impact on the homeowners for that period of time. It's just a slow incremental increase rather than one big hit.
But to be more specific on the elimination of the homestead credit and the work that you all did on the commission, the funds were supposed to go to additional officers, and in this plan, all those funds are not going for officers, correct?
That's right. The mayor's plan does not dedicate it. The homestead tax credit money to new officers. It is focused on the education proposal that we'll hear in a few minutes from Deputy Mayor Clough.
Yes.
So from the FOP perspective, we've been steadfast on this. We looked at the situation and said we not only wanted to support the idea of how of the need for more officers, but how to sustainably fund those officers. And through the work of the Staffing Commission, we said, listen, one, 2 years ago, people said we'll pay more in taxes to get more officers. We said, you know what? We appreciate that, but stand by. Let us work collaboratively with the new Director of Public Safety and ensure we're as effective and efficient as possible before we come to you to ask for that. We've gone through that process. We said we need 500 officers, and here's how to pay for them. You have to do both. You need the public safety tax dollars and the homestead credit elimination dollars to draw down that number that's been put forward. That's also been confirmed by the CFO of the council and all the due diligence that was completed. However, in that discussion, we were also very adamant that we, the police officers, wanted to make sure that we saw any offset that would be impacting our schools and the library to be offset in that process. That's going to require language, ordinance language within any type of passage of that increase, and it's something that we've talked with the Marion County Tax Council about as well. Without a doubt, the mayor's proposal diverges greatly from that proposal. But again, it's a plan and it's on the table. Now let's talk about how we bridge the gap and the difference in between. I hope and I pray, I don't know that there's anyone involved in this discussion that's saying it's an all or nothing proposition. Not the mayor's office, not the council, not the staffing commission. But we're not talking about adding officers to get a new program. We're talking about adding officers just to get back to the bare minimum baseline we need to properly police the city of Indianapolis. So we need to keep that in mind. That's just to get back to level, to par for the course here. So to shortcut that in any way and not get to that number means at the end of that process, we're still going to be short officers.
It sounds like we are back to taking another break, and we'll return to Afternoons with Amos.